The views and opinions expressed by any hosts or guests of WJMS Radio do not reflect the beliefs of its owners or associates. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to WJMS Radio or the show hosts whose words, advice, and or opinions appear from or on our website or on air.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Are we on the air?
You're listening to WJMSradio.com.
Jam.
This chick is a sick individual.
You're tuned in to Sound Off with your girl Jams right here on WJMSradio.com.
There is no competition.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Sound Off right here on WJMS Radio. This is your girl, Jams. So excited to be with you guys today. I have a really, really great show for you. Before we get into that, some, of course, announcements and housekeeping for the greater good, if you will. You can follow the radio station at WJMS Radio on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. We also have a little bit of content on YouTube that we're beefing up a little bit. So if you're interested in checking out some video blogs and stuff like that, please check us out on YouTube as well. For today's show, we'll be live streaming on our Get Vocal page. We'll also be live streaming on my personal Facebook page, the WJMS Radio page, and the YouTube page. And I will do my best to monitor all three feeds and get to everybody who comments or who mentions anything. So be patient, but do feel free to comment and reach out if you have questions and things like that. I also want to thank the folks behind the scenes that make Sound Off and WJMS Radio possible. Thank you guys so much for all the work that you do. Definitely appreciate it. To all the listeners like you that tune in regularly and make me a part of your Saturday afternoon, I definitely appreciate that as well, especially today, since today is a little bit of a different time slot. I know you guys are used to hearing me at noon. So today we're a little bit later in the afternoon, but we still have a really, really great show for you guys. So I'm very, very excited. Again, if you want to get in touch with us on any of those platforms, please feel free. Today's show, if you guys remember back in, I want to say April, I was invited to be the keynote speaker for the NYU Black Girl Symposium or Black Girl Summit, if you will. And I was really, really excited to do that. And shout out to my girl, Chloe, for providing me with that opportunity. I'd never been a keynote speaker or like a featured speaker anywhere really. So that was really exciting for me. But during that time that I was there, I met a host of extremely talented and amazing and professional students that are at NYU currently. So I was able to connect with a lot of them and really put together some partnerships that I think are going to be wonderful for the station and for them as well. And my special guest for today is one of those people. So B. Annie Owoye is a student at NYU. She's second year, so she's a sophomore. Her passion is environmentalism and cross-cultural connections, and it's led her to want to pursue a career in foreign diplomacy, focusing on human rights and sustainable development in countries often overlooked and underestimated. She also is a first-generation Nigerian-American, so she strives to mobilize and motivate anyone that's willing to listen while also learning and growing through the people that she meets. And I'm really, really excited because she came to me with this idea for stuff that she's passionate about and stuff that she wants to talk about. And I was like, oh, I have not had a show about this type of topic in a long time. Or, you know, maybe I can't really recall if I've had a show with this sort of global magnitude, if you will. You know, I've talked about some small things and some nationwide things, but I haven't dived much into the foreign diplomacy sector of things. So I'm really, really excited to kind of bring this brand new episode to air today. So be welcome to the show. How are you doing today? And I'm so excited to sort of see you, but sort of excited to talk with you today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Of course, of course. So I gave the audience a little bit of a background on you, just a very, very brief bio for you. But why don't you give the audience a little bit more of an in-depth sort of biography of who you are, where you came from, you know, what you're doing now, and what brought you to NYU?
Okay, so I was originally born in Brooklyn, two immigrant parents. So both of them came from Nigeria. And from there, we lived here for only like a little bit before moving. So I really grew up around the East Coast, I like to say, just because I never really lived anywhere for long. But currently I live in Maryland in Baltimore. And from there, I guess like at first when I started moving, I absolutely hated it. I wanted to, you know, have family, friends and whatnot. But I guess by Baltimore, I think that was around fourth grade. Maybe I liked moving at that point. I don't know. But by seventh grade, I actually decided that, because by then I was living with a single parent. And so my siblings and I, we grew up moving around a lot. And with that, having involvement in school was always hard, just because with transportation and whatnot, it's not like I was going to ask my mom, who was already sacrificing enough, to then, you know, go and pick me up from an after school activity. So I figured the only way that I could, or one of the only ways that I could really do everything I wanted to do at school while still like getting that great education and not stressing my mom out, was by going to a boarding school. So I guess by the eighth grade, I had like been applying to programs, trying to see like what I could do to get to go to a boarding school. And by eighth grade, I was, I guess, quote unquote, moved from Baltimore to go to a boarding school in Massachusetts. And since then, I went to school from eighth to 12th grade at a school in Massachusetts, would come home for the breaks, and now I go to school in New York. So it's not as far, thankfully. I'm sure my mom's very happy about that. but yeah, definitely, I guess I figured out very quickly that whatever profession I wanted to go into, I wanted it to be involving with like people. And so I used to think, oh yeah, I'm going to be like, I come from, I guess, a medical family because my mom's a nurse. So I thought I was going to go into medicine. But then I guess the people that I was meeting in the past kind of shaped the reasons why I want to go into foreign diplomacy. But also I think the moving helped as well, because I realized like I'm the kind of person that does like to be on the move. I guess growing up and hating it, like it kind of got me prepared for that, but also allowed me to realize that, first of all, I love America. I'm a very patriotic person in what the kind of opportunities that are provided. But I definitely do think that this kind of trepidation of living outside the country, like, I don't want to hold myself to that. And I would prefer to, I guess, advocate for the best, to advocate for the best possibilities of using American influence in other places, in doing that successfully by being someone who's very conscious and aware of the intricacies that come with diplomacy and doing diplomacy in a sensitive way.
Definitely. So, yeah, I mean, that's a lot to unpack what you just said there. I don't even know where to begin. But in terms of, you know, environmental justice and things like that, what is it that you are the most passionate about? Like, what is it that draws you to this in the first place? You know, like, because environmental justice can be a very broad sort of paint stroke, if you will, in this entire painting. So what is it that you want to zoom in on a little bit more and really focus in on the most?
So I guess my interest with environmental studies started in 11th grade when I took AP Environmental Science. And of course, like, yeah, it was just a course and my teachers were good, but that course is mainly built on the biology side of things. And then slowly but surely, as I got more familiar with Indigenous rights, with Indigenous rights and whatnot, I realized that this field of environmental justice exists. And so going into college my first year, hearing the type of issues that people were concerned about within environmentalism, for me, like growing up in different communities that happen to be lower middle class and whatnot, like having to understand the exposure to different health issues or different companies that take advantage of the fact that they can build in certain areas that other people won't advocate for them not being there, for the companies that want to take advantage of that. So for me, understanding that the link between human rights and environmental justice is so strong, especially in places that I haven't been before. So when we talk about like on a global scale and why I want to do foreign diplomacy, looking at how there have been horrendous crimes against humanity done, especially to Indigenous people by taking their land, but then taking it a step further and seeing how climate change is then affecting people who may not be directly affected by people coming in or disrupting the land use, but indirectly with the change in soil health and with the change in vegetation. Like, they are not able to continue their livelihoods the same ways that they were in the past. And more often than not, the people that are most affected by climate change are the people that are not contributing as much negatively to climate change. And so for me, like, that kind of issue, I feel like more people need to care about that, and more people need to do whatever they can to advocate for that if they have, or if they're in the right spaces to do so. So that's that kind of environmental justice is what I'm interested in. And a lot of it has to do with the people that are not necessarily the most able to advocate for themselves on a legal or a policy scale.
Got you. Okay. So, and for those folks that are just tuning in, we're discussing a little bit of environmental justice. And so for me, this topic is one of those topics where, like, I being 100% straight up with you, I've never researched into environmental justice. Like, I know, like, when we start to talk about the things that have happened and the stuff and the history and the different sort of standoffs that we've had against, you know, big corporations and things like that, I'm aware of those, and I'm very familiar with all of those situations, but I never dive deep into environmental justice. So as I was researching this show for today, you know, it was one of those things, it's one of those rabbit holes that you, like, dive down into. And once you start diving, you know, you're, like, grabbing on for anything on the sides to try and pull yourself back up, because you're, like, you just get so deep into it that you're like, oh my God, you know, like, it's one of those things that is, it's terrifying, because you realize you don't really want to know how deep down this rabbit hole goes, but you kind of want to keep going because you're just curious, like, you know, how much corruption is there really, you know, like, you want to keep going. And the same, I've had the same kind of reaction, when I was, well, I'm not when I was, but I still actively do. But when I was speaking about the prison industrial complex and private prison industry and mass incarceration and all that kind of stuff, and when you really start to break down some of these systems of racial oppression and all of the things that really people just don't pay attention to and you don't even notice because they're so, like, just insidious. It's just like, it's one of those rabbit holes that, like, once you go down, you're, like, forever changed a little bit. You know, it makes you look a little bit differently at things. It makes you consider stuff a little bit more deeply. But to give everybody a little bit of background, so what we're talking about in terms of environmental justice is this idea or this sort of movement, this passion that was championed primarily by African Americans, Latinos, Asians, Pacific Islanders, and Native Americans. Where the movement basically addresses statistics. The statistics match it, which is what's even scary. It's not something that we're like, this seems... No, the numbers actually tell you it's what's really happening. But the people who live, work, and play in America's most, you know, polluted environments are commonly people of color and the poor. And the reason that that happens is because, you know, it's not an accident. There are, you know, there's different readings and different people that have spoken on this idea that big corporations and big companies tend to put landfills and dumps and, you know, oil pipelines and things like that in communities where they know that the people don't have the resources to truly protest or to truly know what's going on or the resources to get involved and know what's happening before it happens. So this is not an accident. I mean, it goes back and stems back to decades ago from, you know, even as early as the 1960s and earlier, you know, when Latino farm workers organized by Cesar Chavez went and fought for workplace rights. It also happened in 67 when African-American students took to the streets of Houston, Texas to oppose garbage, a city garbage dump that was proposed to be or that was that killed two of the kids in their community. 68, West Harlem, New York City, they fought unsuccessfully against a sewage treatment plant in the community. Even to modern day, 2016, 2017, if you guys remember the Dakota Access Pipeline, that is a modern day example of environmental justice being fought right in front of us, on social media, on the internet and on the web so that everybody can watch what's going down. So there's all of these different things and different environmental things that have happened that really start to make you think, like, you know, it's just another system. There's this term going around called environmental racism. And it's another term that just really kind of describes what is happening in the country and, you know, why it's happening. So I'm really, really excited, Annie, that you're on the phone with me or that you're, you know, on video with me so we can chat about this, you know, like, and even Flint, Michigan, when I was thinking about Flint, Michigan, I'm like, you know what? Same thing. It's definitely the same exact thing in a way. It's, you know, it's environmental racism. So it's, you know, what are your thoughts on all this? And I mean, like, ugh, how deep down in this rabbit hole have you gone? You know, like, what has your knowledge brought you to?
So it's funny that you mentioned like the criminal justice system and the prison industrial system, because I wouldn't say that was like a gateway into learning more, but I definitely, when I first began activism, it definitely centered around Black communities and this prison industrial system, like the school to prison pipeline. And so I guess for me, the main things I don't think that in science in general people realize is how the prevalence in our country, in the United States, with environmental racism is just so strong and stark, and there's so much empirical evidence for this. And you would think that it's directly putting people into harm's way. Like when you think of redlining, when you think of how redlining began, and then by what measures they used in order to pick those communities that were sectioned off for African Americans and other communities, you think, okay, it's these areas that are harder to live in. And if it's harder to live in, okay, what are we exposing people to? And so environmental racism is very sad, because while we're thinking, okay, you know, we understand that certain communities or certain ethnic groups might have a higher probability of having this disease or that disease, when you learn that it's almost been sanctioned by a county, or like, for example, with the water crisis that's happening in New York right now, like having lead in water in certain pipelines, for example, you might think that that's an infrastructure issue, or you might not necessarily think of that as environmental justice or environmental racism. But those factors and why they're closer associated to one group of people instead of another group of people leads you to wonder, like, why the resources being prioritized in certain areas and in other areas being ignored and neglected. And then thinking about that on a global scale, because to me, in the United States, I think that there's a larger consciousness of this. And I guess, you know, people try to pay more attention to Native American rights simply because of our history with that, and how the blatant disrespect for Native Americans throughout time, especially in the United States, like, it's obvious. And so people may be aware of that, but there are still communities in the world that may not have as much coverage or as much historical context within like a more general sense to other people of their, of the disrespect and the blatant advantageous regards that other people have pursued those groups with. But they're still out there, and there's still like the news coverage won't necessarily tell you about those stories. And so for me, like, that's why I guess I'm interested in all kind of environmental justice, but especially going down that rabbit hole of realizing that there are different communities in which people literally do not know the type of environmental racism they are experiencing. Like on a global scale, people may not be covering these issues, and that hurts me more, just because these are communities who have cared for their environment, have existed in those environments for so long, and yet have not not been protected by a global community that often like cares about these issues but may not know about it, or may not have the right resources to connect them with ways to improve the situation.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's that whole idea, but then there's also this idea of connecting them to the resources, but then knowing that you need resources in the first place. Yeah, you know, exactly. The fact that there are some things that happen that folks don't even know about, you know, these are like, you know, the Flint, Michigan water, you know, the Dakota Access Pipeline, all of these different things that I read earlier off the list here, you know, all of these things are stuff that, you know, the folks knew about. And there's the scary part of this story that there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes that don't get any press, any publicity, you know, the communities aren't aware of. Or, you know, even like going down a little bit further or branching off a little bit is like this idea of gentrification, you know, like this idea that, they're raising property taxes in, you know, poor neighborhoods so that the people who used to live there can't afford to live there anymore. And then they bring in, you know, wealthy middle class people who can afford it. And then, or they bring in more Starbucks or bring in more corporations or bring in whatever, you know, like these are the kinds of things that kind of sometimes go underneath the radar a little bit when people aren't paying attention. It's like you're driving past and it's like all of a sudden you look up and it's like, oh, I remember I used to live in this neighborhood, and you come back to that neighborhood and all of a sudden, you know, it looks nothing like what you left because they've taken over and they've, you know, created new multi-level housing apartments and they've created, you know, shopping malls or made a parking lot, you know, out of a tenement building that may have had many families in it. And you never know what happens to those families that they displace. You know, you never hear about those families. They just kind of fade into the abyss and they're just lost in the system. But it's this idea that there are these things that happen, you know, beneath the surface that we don't know about. And that's the thing that truly frightens me is like, you know, how do you stay on top of everything? You know, as somebody who's studying this and as somebody who's sort of majoring in this kind of thing, you know, are there ways to stay involved and stay on top of the things that are happening? You know, it's hard because there are so many communities, there are so many places, you can't be everywhere at once. You can't stay on top of everything at once. So how do you champion your own area and make a difference in your own area? Like, what are some of the things that you're doing as a student for that?
So I would say, so with the death of Toni Morrison, like that hit me hard just because I really, really looked up to her as a scholar, as an author, like just as a person. Yeah. And one of the ways that I guess was inspired by just her legacy that she left behind was exactly what you said of these stories that, for example, I think that the media and I think that news coverage in the United States is very much dominated by a certain narrative. Right now it has to do with politics, with the upcoming election, and with the president. And so for me, like trying to, like seeing the fact that these are the popular stories of what someone said and not the fact that, I don't know, lives have been ruined in this certain place or that this currently happening, I took to like my personal social media and started this series called Cultivating Consciousness. And basically every week I try to talk about the stories that personally stood out to me. And so it's in two different sections. One's called Things That I'm Praising For, like, because I feel like a lot of times the news, they cover bad news, and that can often deter people from even listening to news at all. But there is good news, and I feel like that good news we should praise for it. You know, we should be happy about it. And so the first part is things I'm praising for. And so like recent examples of that have been San Francisco, the international airport, they banned single use plastic bottles from being sold. And like for me, that's a big thing, kind of, just because for an international airport, to do that, it's a good sign that we're starting as a society to realize, okay, like our waste consumption is not sustainable. It's not going to get us to where we need to be, and it's not going to get our future generations the resources and the lifestyle that they want. So like that's an example of something that came up that was positive. And then the second part that I always try to focus on is things that I'm praying for. Just because I am a person of faith, and I think that it's a great way to like allow people to understand that while you are taking in bad news, it doesn't always have to stay bad news. You know, like there could be a possibility for improvement. And so, of course, with that section, unfortunately, there's a little more things that I'm praying for in this day and age. But I try to focus on the stories that I feel like don't really get the media coverage that they deserve or that people aren't necessarily thinking about right now. And I also try to do it with a focus on the things that I'm passionate about, human rights and the environmental, you know, the environmental crisis that we're going on, that's going on right now. Because, yeah, I think that a lot of times, especially because I have most of my followers around my age group, it's very easy to generalize the type of media that we're getting into media and news coverage about celebrities or about politics, but not necessarily about, you know, the crisis in Yemen right now, or You know, the Syrian, like these kind of issues that, again, they might seem daunting and they might seem too complex to understand. But honestly, if you present them in the right way, you can easily find more resources to help you delve deeper into it. And I purposely try to not include a source, like a particular source that I'm getting the news from, because I always try to make sure that each of the stories that I'm putting on this series have at least 5 different sources that, just so then I can avoid, like, what's it called? A bias. Because, for example, with this fake news media age, like, it's very easy for someone to think, oh, you got your source from this person. Oh, I don't believe the story. And so I'm just making sure that people know that the stories, one, are reliable, but two, you can decide what kind of bias you want to read the issue about. Like, so for example, let's see, there was an issue that recently happened with a chemical company leaking chemicals in, I'm not going to try to butcher this state, I think maybe it was Indiana, but that happened in late July area. And that's an example of where it was more local news coverage. And so I allowed people to read the type of news coverage that is more, I guess, in line with their reading style, with their journalistic style, just so then, again, it's giving you the resources that you need to know that these stories exist, but it's not telling you what exactly or how exactly you should be reading into the story.
So I'm smiling because welcome to WJMS Radio. That's exactly what this platform is. Everything that you just said is exactly what this platform is about. It's literally about, you know, focusing on the news stories that the news doesn't want to talk about. It's presenting the news in a way that makes sense to the younger generation so that they're engaging in it and realizing how it affects them. Like, literally everything you just said, I just smile because I'm like,
Nice.
That's literally the basis of this radio station, is that. So I'm really, really, like, you and I are going to be working together a little bit more, just so you know.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely, that's the platform that I wanted to have, is just this platform where I'm tired of seeing the same 7 news stories. You know, you ask people, you could go into a room right now. I think I've done this before in any places where I've been a public speaker. I go into a room and I say, how many of you watch the news? And there may be like 4-5 people that raise their hand. And I'm like, is it because it's negative? Is it because of time? Is it because of, you know, I give them a list of things. And most of the time, the majority of people raise their hands because they say it's negative, you know, and then that's how I present the radio station. I say, okay, so this is why we're Radio Reimagined. We're not talking about, or we're not presenting those same negative news stories that everybody else is presenting on all these news channels. We're focusing on the good and the positive things that are happening in the community that you're in the community near you, in a community that you may know somebody in. But we're focusing on these things that are going on right in your backyard that don't get any attention from the media that need to, because they're making a difference in the community. They're making a difference in the world. And you immediately start to see a shift. Like, people start to shift in their seats like, oh, what is she talking about? You know, because there's such a lack of variety in news, you know, like, there's so many news things and things going on in the world. And like, it's hard to believe that the things that you see on CNN or the things that you see, you know, on the ticking feed across whatever news channel, like, this is it, like, this is breaking news, you know, like, that's the kind of stuff that we try to get away from. Of course, the major things that need to be focused on, we're going to bring attention to it. We're going to talk about the hot topics. We're going to talk about the things that are going on. But by and large, we're going to be talking about stuff that's happening, you know, right here in Yonkers, New York, or right there, you know, in whatever city that you might be in that you didn't know is going on, you know, so you can go out and you can join and you can be a part of whatever it is. Because it's like, you know, the other thing too is, like, I find that by and large, there are so many nonprofits and organizations and businesses that go under because of lack of word of mouth. Like, people just aren't talking about it. People just aren't using them as a resource. They're not making the impact that they need to. And so the radio station, I really feel like, is able to give people that platform that they need to say, hey, look at what I'm doing. This is what I need from you guys to keep this service happening in your community. And it's helpful, you know, and it's measurable. And I think, like, that's the way that I'm sort of championing change a little bit, if you will. But to steer it back to the conversation at hand. So The one thing that I found interesting, and, you know, because we settled on this topic earlier this week, and I've been doing little bits of research for the entire week. So, like, as I'm commuting into work, I switched my commute a little bit, so I'm not on the bus anymore. And now I take a scooter, right? So, and I scoot through several parts of the city at this stage, like through Yonkers, not Manhattan, because Manhattan is crazy. And, like, so, like, not Manhattan, but, like, in Yonkers, where it's a little bit more of a regular city, I scoot through the city basically to get to the train station. And I see the sections, you know, I see a lot of this stuff happening firsthand, you know, like, I see the trash, you know, the trash truck dropping trash as it goes down the street. Of course, it doesn't happen in the middle class neighborhoods. This is always in, like, the urban, you know, the rural areas. You know, I see when I get on the subway train every morning, I notice that we're not driving through, you know, quote unquote, Beverly Hills. We're not driving through, you know, the Flatiron District in the city. We're driving through the hood. We're driving through the Bronx. We're driving through the projects. We're, you know, all of these subway stations and all of these subway trains and all of these mass transit modes of transit basically are all put and navigated through, you know, middle, like, underclass or, you know, underdeveloped areas of the city. And it's really sad, you know. So it's like, it just, it's one of those things where, like, as you're researching this topic, you start to see it, you know, like, once your eyes are open, your eyes are open, yeah. You know, and you start, and there's things you're like, oh, that's what's up. Like, really? You know what I mean? Like, you start to see and you start to get a little cynical about the state, like the state of things, if you will, as you're just going through your regular day. So I found myself feeling that way, you know, as I was traveling every day and as I was commuting every day, just seeing the different ways that this environmental justice, you know, plays out in these communities and in these roles. And I'm just like, it's a shame. It really is a shame. You know, it's.
Yeah. Especially to go off like transportation, because so New York is one of the only cities in the United States that actually has good transportation, reliable transportation. And so, like, living in Baltimore, I would always commute on public transport to get into my job in the city. And for me, especially, like, I don't think people realize how, even if it's not directly involved with environmentalism, environmental justice, it always has a stake in the same exact reasons. And so for transportation, if you think about how congested Manhattan is, or in a lot of different cities, how the car congestion and how much energy is being used on car consumption or gas consumption through cars and other vehicles, if you were to invest more into public transportation, and if you think about the people who rely on public transportation more, so lower income communities, if you were to just tweak that and actually put in more money into that type of infrastructure and strengthen that infrastructure, you would not only be better serving these communities and be allowing them just a better way of living, a more sustainable way of living, but also a better way of living if it was more reliable, if it was cleaner, if it was safer. You would also be getting rid of this international problem that we have of overconsumption and with just wasteful practices. So I when I started to realize how many issues that we face that might, you know, fall into LGBTQ rights or reproduction rights or socioeconomic rights, like a lot of them have direct links to environmentalism, but a different type of environmentalism that doesn't automatically come to mind.
Definitely. So given all of that and given all these different branches that there are, how do you stay positive? Like, what motivates you to continue doing this work? Because I find, you know, a lot of times the rabbit hole is dark and it's not welcoming. It's not friendly. And sometimes, you know, you don't always want to stay quote unquote woke, unfortunately. So for you, what is that thing that keeps you going? What is that thing that, you know, motivates you? You know, have there been moments in your journey so far where you've known for sure that you're making an impact somewhere? Like, and can you talk a little bit about those moments for you and that stuff that keeps you going?
Yeah, of course. So I think what keeps me going, one, is my faith, just because I feel like that's a pretty big part of my identity. But also when I am exposed to those smaller stories that may not get the media coverage that they deserve, when I am able to encounter a person doing activism in India or a person doing activism in some other place, or in some other way, like that is what motivates me, just because I think that especially for environmentalism and climate change activism, it's very easy to believe that the activists should be downtrodden and not have hope and not optimistic, just because when you look at the current state of our environment, like it's hurting, you know, and we need to act more. But there are so many people that are doing countless work to try to fix this problem in their communities and other communities, and to raise awareness that it really, like, you have to be a part of it, and you have to continue to have that positivity, because I think that it's very easy to believe that nothing's going to happen because it's currently not happening. But I think of the revolutionary ideas that, you know, once were thought to be crazy and how they're now normalized, you know. I always go back to topics like public school, you know, like public school once was deemed like it just wasn't really a thing. It wasn't popular. It wasn't accepted. And now public school has like one of the largest influences. I mean, it needs to be better. Definitely. Don't get me wrong. But I often look to those ideas that seem like they are unlikely, but then have over time gained larger societal influence. And I'm someone that loves to like listen to podcasts and to read books. And so I think in another way, like taking in information also motivates me, because it often like sparks ideas for me and what I want to do. So right now, I actually work in the Office of Sustainability at my school at NYU. And there are a lot, like, so our school, we want to be half our carbon intake by 2030 and be completely carbon neutral by 2050, which is like a big deal for like a as big of a school as NYU. But, you know, they're trying to take strides to do that successfully. And while I was sitting in like one of the meetings that we're going through, I was thinking back to I guess you would say like not a tradition, but a part of life that is very common in my household. And we take bucket baths because my mom just grew up with bucket baths. It was absolutely normal for her to take a bucket bath. And there are a lot of people that do that around the world. In the United States, however, it's not as popular. And so there's a program at my school called Green Grants, where if you have a sustainable idea, you can submit your proposal and earn up to $20,000 to help you implement that plan. And I just thought to myself, what if I implemented a proposal to start a bucket bath initiative at my school in the dorms, so we could, one, reach our goal of, you know, lowering our consumption, especially with water, because the water crisis is real. It is very, very, very real. And I don't think people understand that, especially people, communities within the United States who are currently going through the issue. And yet we think of the United States as a whole, of this very privileged country, which it is. But the quality of water is definitely different depending on where you are and who is trying, who are the people being served that water. And so I thought to myself, like, what if I can implement this current program at my school in order to, I guess, raise awareness about the water crisis, but also just because I do think that, again, like, lifestyle choices that we make that we think are normal, they could be abnormal as long as we have a societal shift. You know, like taking longer showers, I think by this point everyone knows, like, yeah, there's somewhat an issue with that. But let's take it a step further and think to ourselves, okay, if I can get as clean, I can have as enjoyable time as showering, taking a bath, cleaning myself, but just in a different way. Like, I wonder what other kind of mental notes people will take on, you know, understanding their consumption.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's funny you mentioned the water thing. People, when I first moved to New York, they're like, yeah, just drink tap water. New York's got the cleanest water in the country. And to this day, I'm still like, no, I don't want to, you know, like it's just, and then I remember when I was growing up too, my mom used to tell me that there was hard water and soft water. And like the difference in the two was how much, like if you're in the shower or you're in the bath or whatever, the difference of the waters is like how much lather you get from your soap. You know, like if it lathers up easily, you have like softer water or something like that. They're like, there's more minerals or something in it, or I might be totally screwing that up. But I remember her telling me that, you know, so there is definitely different water quality all around the world and, you know, all around in every different state, actually. So it's interesting you say that. And the water crisis is real. It's one of those things where like you watch that type of story and you're just like, oh my God, like we're all gonna die in like 30 years. Like, this is crazy, you know? And like, it's just, it's our own fault. You know, like there's things, like you said, taking a bath, like taking a bucket bath instead of taking a long shower. Like there are so many small little compromises that we as people could make in our quote unquote comfortable lives that would probably do the world so much good if we would do them on a grand scale. You know, like it's insane because there are people, they're just, you're so used to your quote unquote luxury or your quote unquote comfort that you're not willing to do these small inconveniences, you know. Yeah. And it's really, really sad because it's like, this is our world here. Like, this is our earth. So can you take a bath once a week instead of a shower to save the earth? And people are like, yeah, you know, it's like, really, you know? So it's hard to motivate people to make these changes when they don't seem to understand, or they don't see the global, you know, like we're in such a immediate gratification type of time where it's like, if you don't touch something and it burns you immediately, you know, you don't make the association that it's bad. You know, we're that type of situation where it's like, if you don't see the immediate impact, you're just like, oh, it's not that bad. It's one bottle. Yeah, but it's one bottle across billions of people. You know, if every person on the earth thought, oh, it's just one bottle, we'd be living on bottles. You know, like we'd be walking on bottles, swimming in bottles. It'd be ridiculous. You know, so it's one of those things where people don't realize the buildup effect of just doing small little things to make things better and how much it can help the world as a whole. You know, since we're sort of transitioning into sort of the whole world in general, I want to give you a minute to kind of talk about the foreign diplomacy thing, because you did mention some really interesting stuff about, you know, just representation in foreign matters and stuff like that. So can you talk a little bit about, or switch gears and talk a little bit about just foreign diplomacy and how that in representation makes a difference in all of those types of situations as well?
Of course. So the environmental aspect of this career plan of mine actually happened after I realized that I absolutely want to go into foreign diplomacy, simply because I feel like, first of all, foreign diplomacy unfortunately has a lot to do with whatever administration is in place at the time. But the overall, when you think of foreign diplomacy, when you think of, I guess, ambassadors and diplomats and whatnot, usually people think of organizations like the UN, United Nations, or they think of World Food Organization, large organizations like that. And for me, that's totally fine. Like, those organizations try to do a lot. They try to improve the quality of life for people ever, right? And try to promote peace, which that's the main crux of diplomacy. Hopefully you're doing it in a peaceful way. But the type of people that occupy those spaces and have historically occupied those spaces have usually been from Western communities, the global North. They've been from certain backgrounds that might have politics in the family business. Like, they are usually people that kind of were invited in those spaces. Like, they already, you know, had a presence there to begin with. And so for me, like, I personally growing up, like, you don't really get to meet diplomats where I'm from or ambassadors. Like, you don't really get to, like, speak with people that might work in this sector. And especially when it comes to current day foreign politics, like, a lot of people who decide to pursue that degree might be interested in the economics of it, or they might be interested in the business of it. And basically, when you're coming from that kind of point of view of either, like, you've been invited to the space because you had the connections to begin with, or you're interested in it in an economic or business developmental standpoint, like, you can easily see how the humanitarian and the more humanistic connection between the people that you're going to be trying to advocate for in that diplomacy and your personal party, who, like, it can very easily be clouded by a lot of things, or you just it, it's I think that more representation needs to be in foreign diplomacy, just because the type of issues that you would find and would attract you and you would pursue has to do with what your priorities are. And I'm not saying that foreign diplomats currently don't have good priorities or whatnot, because obviously they do. But for example, in the State Department, when the Trump administration came into full effect, like, there are a lot of people that had to go by their moral compass of either staying at the State Department or having to leave based on the fact that they just weren't okay with what they were being asked to do or how they were being asked to, you know, proceed. And I really respect those people that chose the fact that, like, you know, I can't do my job of promoting peace well in this situation, so I'm going to find a different way to do it. Because I think, like, with politics, especially with the United States politics, like, there are a lot of different people that influence politicians, you know, like, money is very greatly involved in our current day politics and whatnot. And with foreign diplomacy, it's a little different, just because while there are major organizations that you can work for and that can advocate for your proposal, it's definitely more so, again, like, your interests, your priorities, how hard they're willing to fight for those things. And so I think that especially more Black women need to, and Black women of any and all, like, nationalities need to be involved in foreign politics, just because I often see that, you know, the issues that we find prevalent that happen to be in other communities, like, they may not be on the center stage. And I want those issues to have greater relevance when it comes to, I don't know, the climate summit that's happening in September this month. You know, like, there are a lot of different conferences, there are a lot of different proposals that come out. And because the people that are discussing these proposals, the people that are constructing these proposals only have their lived experiences, they may find it harder to tap into the other issues that other people might be concerned about. So yeah, I want to work in foreign diplomacy just because I think that one, there is a need for greater diversity within foreign diplomats. But also because I do appreciate the fact that while foreign diplomacy has been evolving and been changing for the last, I don't know, like, 60 years or so, like, it definitely still needs greater expansion, especially when it comes to American diplomacy, because other countries, like, of course, like, they deserve more, like, especially island countries right now, if we're talking about climate change, like, island countries and their representatives deserve more respect, more of a platform on a global stage. But like, American politics and American diplomacy often has some of the most powerful influence. And so those diplomats need to be using that in a way that's going to benefit more people than just, you know, their immediate benefactors.
I agree. One of the things that I always consistently stand on my shows that I host on the station is this idea of having a seat at the table, and how important it is for there to be different colors of people all around the table in general, because exactly for the exact reasons that you said, because if there are things that are on the table that are being discussed, if you have a table full of people that have all had similar walks in life, you know, similar privileges, similar advantages, haven't experienced the same kind of struggles or troubles, haven't experienced the same kind of just general living styles as other people, then you have, by and large, a thought, I guess, if you will, on the state and the way that things should be done. But if you allow there to be more variety of, well, if you allow there to be, and this is in politics, this is in anything really, this could be in a boardroom, this could be on a job, but in general, if you allow there to be more varied walks of life, you get a more robust plate of things to take care of, you're going to get a more robust opinion of the things that are on the table in general, and you're going to cover a larger sort of gauntlet of issues in general, because people who have different walks of life are going to have different thoughts, they're going to have different theories, they're going to have different points of view. And when you have different points of view, you know, it opens your eyes. Sometimes if you can have a good conversation, it can open your eyes to, you know, other sides of the story, other sides to the coin, different parts to, you know, your situation that you're looking at. I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with people about a topic that I'm like, it is this, period. And then I've talked to people and I'm like, oh, so there's some room for negotiation here. You know what I mean? Like there's conversations that you have with people and able to have a mature and adult conversation with somebody and both of you have different opinions and you listen to the other person's opinion. Sometimes you may be able to be like, you know what? You have a whole entire point and I need to rethink, you know, my stance, or I need to, you know, go back to the drawing board and really take a hard look at the facts again and so on and so forth. And being in radio and, you know, talking to so many people like I do and having so many shows and doing shows like this in general, where somebody comes to me and says, I have an idea of a show that I want to do, or I have a topic that I'm passionate about, and I have to dive in and say, okay, let's do it. And then I have to dive in and do the research behind it. You know, there are things that I'm like, I didn't have an opinion on this. Now I am very much opinionated on this topic because of X, Y, and Z, you know, and it's, I can say for me that, you know, I hope at the end of the day, when I have these conversations with people, you know, that they walk away having learned something or having seen another perspective or, you know, having had just a good conversation with somebody in general. But it matters, and it matters getting other people's perspectives. You know, that's why I always ask people, what is it that you're passionate about that you want to talk about? Because it's something that I may not know about. And if I don't know about it, then that means now I can share it with my listeners. That means now I can share it with the people that tune in. And now we've expanded that reach. Now we've expanded that platform. And it goes hand in hand. So having varied people at the table and having other opinions on different things is so important, both in diplomacy and you know, economics and business and everything. You have to get varied opinions. You have to. You know, I feel like companies like H&M and, you know, all these companies that have these racism scandals that pop out of the blue have a table full of people sitting around them that all look like each other. They don't have any representation at their tables. And that's why they have these racist issues happen, because it's like you got a whole table of people that look like you. Of course, none of y'all thought this was a problem. You didn't have anybody like looking like any of us at the table to say, OK, here's what we're not going to do, that whole thing. And I like that's why I said I'm a firm believer in having a seat at that table, period.
I agree completely, 100%.
Yeah, so we have about maybe 5 or 6 minutes left in the show. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about anything else that you're passionate about with these 5 minutes, but I also want to give you an opportunity to shout out your contact information and where people can get a hold of you if they're interested in talking to you more or furthering the conversation. But for the next couple of minutes, why don't you just take a few, and if there's anything else that you want to share with us or any closing thoughts on this idea of environmental justice or, you know, foreign diplomacy, any advice for people that want to get involved and want to make a difference or want to start to help to make a difference in some small way. Why don't you take the next few minutes and discuss those things?
Okay, definitely. Yeah, I think that so a lot of times when people approach like environmentalism, they might see it from a science point of view and might not realize like a lot of like citizen scientists, and there are just a lot of ways for people to be involved in environmentalism that don't have to be as daunting as thinking that you need to be a scientist. I think that there are a lot of outlets that people can utilize that don't have to be as daunting as thinking you have to be a scientist, you have to have gone to school in order to have an opinion about these issues. Because, for example, there are a lot of organizations that try to pursue environmental justice through the arts. Or they try to pursue it through education, so allowing the younger generations to have a deeper understanding of their impact, and just, I guess, teaching environmental literacy. Those are great ways to get involved in not only you understanding the broad scope of environmental justice and environmentalism better, but also teaching it to the younger generations or any generation that's interested in engaging in such material. So I'm familiar with programs like Sprout Up. There's another program, I think it's called like Ecological. There are a lot. I definitely, if you want, I can try to send you like a list that I'm compiling of different organizations. Just because, yeah, especially when it comes to the type of people that are in these spaces, like oftentimes it's older generations, often like they don't see a lot of young people, or it's people that, you know, have had, again, like this background in this. So it makes sense why they're there. But I feel like it's just more refreshing to have people from different walks of life that are, you know, contributing to a common common goal. So yeah, definitely through the arts is a great way to get involved in environmentalism. Education is another great way. And whatever you can bring to this fight for climate justice, like it's needed, because I think every walk of life, every single person and what they can do best to help serve this community, this growing community, they're needed, and they, you know, they'll be welcomed. So I would say that about environmentalism. And then with foreign diplomacy, I think that honestly, there are not a lot of ways to get involved in foreign diplomacy if you don't have a master's, which kind of sucks, you know, like undergraduate yeah. opportunities, you know, they're lacking. But at the same time, I think that just constantly trying to influence the people around you really does make a difference. I think that like the ways that I stay motivated is by allowing myself to be this kind of talking point to the communities around me, just because, you know, that prepares me for when, you know, I do have to be debating someone on the grand stage or whatnot. Like, it's a good preparation for me to make sure I am having these conversations with people that might not have the same viewpoints as me, but still doing that in, of course, a respectful and a way that's like really elevating the level of discourse we're able to have. So for my work, you know, I mean, really, I don't really use social media that much. I guess I should get on it more. But yeah, I have a LinkedIn and my Instagram is just, so, that's where I do the cultivating consciousness. So mm-hmm. I guess that would be good. So it's at be.owoeye. Okay. And yeah, besides from that, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here and to share about what I'm passionate about, just because, yeah, I think that a lot more people would be interested in it if they like understood the intersections between these two things.
Yeah, it's one of the, like I said, it's a rabbit hole. And once you go down it, you know, you can't come back out. You start to see things from a whole new viewpoint once you start really digging into environmental justice. But I definitely want to thank you for taking the time out to be with me today and for all the scheduling and stuff like that and the back and forth. I know it took us a long time to coordinate this, but I really truly think this was a wonderful episode. So I'm glad that we were able to make it happen and bring it to light here. Definitely want to connect with you again. Definitely about your podcast that you're doing and stuff like that, since it's right in line with what we're doing with the radio station. So I have some ideas already that are swirling around in my head, which is dangerous for you. So just be ready. but I want to thank you again for being with us and sharing, you know, all the stuff that you're doing, for sharing this topic, because it's something, like I said, I haven't dived into on the show yet before. So I'm really glad, and I'm always grateful whenever I can bring a different topic to light that I haven't been able to discuss before, because I feel like we reach a different group of people and we can really start to push different things forward, you know, once we start having different conversations and hitting different platforms. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to chat about this. I will connect with you again offline, of course. And folks, thank you so much for listening and tuning in. Austin, thank you for chatting with me here on Get Vocal. To all the folks that tuned in through YouTube, Facebook, both on the WJMS side and on my personal Facebook page side, thank you very much. I'll be back again with a brand new episode of Sound Off next Saturday at 12. Until then, I'm going to dive a little bit even more deeper into this environmental justice topic, because I think there was some good things that I was researching. I saw a couple of organizations that are helping out in different ways that, you know, you can get involved. So I think I may hop on some committees or something, or at least start to read some more articles and things like that. So thank you for waking me up, if you will, and for enlightening me a little bit. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Of course. All right, folks. So again, I'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Until then, everybody be safe, and I'll see you next time right here on WJMS Radio.
It's the rap singer, the hook cast, real live crime, big son of a gal.
Heart made of stone,
ain't doing so cold,
cause my girl up and gone,
she'll be back in the morning.
Go on, mama, take your drama,
seems like I can't live without
her. I'm a aching mom,
cause my heart
stove. As I was dreaming of a bag, and I woke, it was starting to snow.
Fuck your ass, yeah.
And in a bed full of cash, you slowly rolled over and whispered back to me. That's just the way things have to be.
Thanks for listening. Tune in 24/7 at WJMSradio.com.